What's happening, guys? Happy Tuesday, and thank you all for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. It is UFC 303 Fight Week, International Fight Week to be exact. The weekend that Chael Sonnen will be inducted into the Hall of Fame, and it's a big card, guys. I'm going to get into everything on today's episode, and later in particular, I'm going to share with you, we got Ortega and Lopez getting ready to fight. You might not know that. This is a last-minute replacement and a move up in weight class by Ortega. We got Conor McGregor, who is sticking to the story that he is withdrawn from an ass-whipping contest due to a discolored pinky toe. And I, like everybody else, am going to play along, even though it's not true. Lots to get into, everybody. But let's begin with what happened over the weekend in Saudi Arabia. I've been pissed off at Robert Whittaker for almost 2 years. But he doesn't know. He doesn't know, so I don't get anything for it. Right, like you upset with a guy, and the guy has to like call you to make, hey man, are we cool? Like you get something for, or you get a little attention. I get nothing because he didn't know. Why was I mad at Robert Whittaker? Hard to specifically remember, but it had something to do with his build towards Adesanya that I didn't like, and therefore I, as a fan, was aggrieved, and I had been mad at him. It's over. That guy has my respect in a way that would be difficult for me to explain. Like, not all champions are created the same. Even though the belt says it and the history books will say it, they're not created the same. And then you go to a more elite, talk about Hall of Famers. But they're not all created the same. There are some guys that a light is shining on brighter. You get a whole bunch of studs together and they look around and go, ooh, that guy's really good, right? Like, there's just, you understand this. That's Robert Whittaker. He is as good as anyone that has ever done this sport. And the number one wrestler killer in history, a guy that calls himself the Crippler, his name is Chris Lieben. The number two wrestler killer in history is Lyoto Machida. And the number three is Robert Whittaker, in that order. If you ever want to ask me about that later, I could turn that into a whole piece. It's not my point right now. I share that for, like, some guys just know how to deal with wrestlers. Chris Lieben, the more decorative a wrestler you were, the faster you were going to fall. And I could name some names for you that he brought down that you're not even thinking. You don't even know about Boyd Ball. You don't even know about Otto Olsen. You don't remember Aaron Simpson. You don't know who Terry Martin is. He was the biggest problem ever. And then you had Machida. For whatever reason, we couldn't get a hold of him. Nobody destroyed Team Quest more than Lyoto Machida. I mean, it's just the way that it was. We just couldn't get a hold of him. And then you got Whittaker. And you could go and see, as an example, right, as proof to my premise, any one of the 10 rounds he did opposite Yoel Romero. Pick one at random. And you will stand back and go, God damn, that guy is good. And he's good at defending wrestlers. So where I go with that is Robert Whittaker has been difficult, in my opinion. Okay? This goes back to when I was mad at him that he doesn't even know about. What's the point of being mad at a guy if you can't get any attention for it, right? What's the point of that? I wasted 2 years. But he's hard to get to the ring. In my opinion, he's difficult to get to the ring. And he was supposed to take on Chimaev, which is the grenade that nobody wants to jump on. So now you have a guy, I just told you he's hard to get to the ring. Well, then he's not the one that's going to jump on the grenade that nobody wants to deal with. But he was. Why? And what would have happened? And what was he promised? Anything? I don't have evidence he was promised anything. I don't have evidence, and neither do you, that when Robert Whittaker agreed to take on Chimaev for 5 rounds in a main event, you don't have any evidence, and neither do I, that he was even promised a number one contendership. In fact, we as a community believe that's already going to Sean Strickland. So it was a pretty incredible thing. Like, it kind of, it kind of puts a dent in the boat of my argument that he's hard to get to the ring. It kind of defeats it. Now, stay with me here. People like to say MMA math doesn't work. It works all the time. Not only does it work all the time, it is the number one thing that my partner DraftKings will go off of. The number one thing that DraftKings will look to is common opponent. The number one thing in the NCAA for wrestling is head-to-head competition. Right underneath that is common opponent. It works all the time. There's stupid expressions that have come in this sport and people have accepted and they stuck around. Styles make matchups. No, they don't. Shut up. Just shut up with it. Take that in your footwork, in your gold teeth, in your eighth grade boxing education somewhere else. But what would have happened if Whitaker took on Chimaev? And before you answer that, before you tell me about the unbeatable Chimaev, I agree, I've seen it too. You gotta understand it's Whitaker. So if you want to tell me how great Chimaev is at wrestling, do you understand Yoel Romero was the best? Not maybe. He was the world champion. Do you understand that? So your argument of wrestling, it's not as strong as you once thought. Now you understand that Robert Whittaker, only behind Chris Lieben and Lyoto Machida, deals with wrestlers better than anybody. Now you get to the common opponent. Ikram, believe I'm saying that right, who Robert Whittaker ends up fighting, fought and lost one fight ever. He was in the Brave organization to Chimaev, and I watched it this morning. Now, I can't go as far as to tell you that Ikram was beating him. I can't go that far, but damn, he was doing good. He was doing, Chimaev steps in, it's like a slip, boom, with a lead uppercut, puts him down. That's very interesting. That's at 170 pounds. So before you say that Chimaev would have gone through Robert Whittaker, like, I get the respect that you want to show Chimaev. I do too. But you then have a reality. You have a reality that keeps being resisted by Robert Whittaker. You have a narrative that you can't teach an old dog new tricks. You have a narrative that a guy that's already climbed the mountain, who's already rich, famous, going into the Hall of Fame, like there's literally nothing more that he can do. There's not an award out there that he hasn't won. You think his motivation's down, but he's returning to main events. He's extremely hungry. And the perfect storm for Robert Whittaker, it's two things. It's not just a wrestling heavy guy. The perfect storm is a wrestling heavy guy who's the favorite. That is when the Robert Whittaker shows up. I mean, it's just one of those things. Like there's guys that operate and the way that they approach the match speaks a lot to what's going to happen within the match. I mean, the only thing that bit Robert Whittaker in the ass against Rikus Duplessis was he's a 3-1 favorite. You flip that, you somehow had like a magic wand that could flip the sports book and make Duplessis the favorite over Whittaker, you would have had a totally different result. I really believe that. As silly as that might have sounded, I really believe that. And I could show you left and right athletes over time in all sports, baseball, basketball, gymnastics, in all sports that did better as an underdog. And I can show you athletes that did better, but they had to be the favorite. And I really just wanted to bring that to your attention because I feel like the highlight coming out of this isn't should Robert Whittaker fight for the title, isn't should Robert Whittaker replace Sean Strickland in terms of who should be number one. He's not going to pass him in the rankings. Should Whittaker go and fight Sean Strickland? Like, it's not really that. The narrative has been a little bit more fun, which is an argument. And I love these kinds of things. How would have he done if it was Chimaev? And I wanted to bring it to your attention. Ikram and Chimaev fought. You might want to go look that matchup. In your opinion, in the supposed fight of what would have happened, I'm sure they'll try to get that back together. But your opinion might change. Diego Lopez, this is far more consequential than people realize or even they're going to have time to realize because of the short notice of this fight. Brian Ortega is one of the most misunderstood people in this sport. Nate Diaz is the most misunderstood, and Ortega's right near him. And I like the comparison with Ortega and Diaz. My sense is Ortega looks up to Diaz in some fashion. And I said, because he fights just like him. He does his promos just like him. I mean, Ortega, just like Nate Diaz, cannot talk about fighting without boasting a jiu-jitsu black belt and proud of where he got it. Henner Gracie for Ortega, Caesar Gracie for Nate Diaz. But when you get in the fight, that's not the way. This is what you got to worry about, right? They're gonna rope-a-dope you in the media. They're gonna talk about all the guillotines and all the armor. They're never gonna try to take you there. They're gonna bust you up, boom, boom, boom. And Ortega did a thing. It was called, Tax Collector? Tax Collector or Debt Collector? And he had a principal role. It was a movie. Shia LaBeouf. Always have a hard time saying that guy's name. Star. A-level actor. It's a great film. Very well made. Ortega was so good in this. I thought it was going to cost him his career. He's going to get scooped up. They're going to be giving him role after role. You guys remember Rampage had something very similar. Rampage, best fighter in the world. And all of a sudden, he leaves fighting because he's going to go and be in the A-team. And it was Dana was, oh my goodness, what am I going to do about this? And then the A-team came out. And Rampage was so good as B.A. Baracus that Dana even took it back. He's like, he got me. I didn't know he could do this well. I'm glad he made the movie. Ortega was that good in Tax Collector. The reason I tell you that is, if you watch that role and you understand what it takes to give that kind of a performance, to have that kind of confidence, and Ortega played a scary character in this, and he had to deliver some very scary lines and then make you, with his body language and his eyes and his presence, believe it. And it was such a stunningly good performance, but he doesn't always carry that over to MMA. Like, that's not what he's into. He's not into the press conferences and the post-fight. He's not into working the media and hustle, and he's so good at it. He is so good at it. If you ever meet him, I tell you he's misunderstood. If you ever meet him, not only will you like him, he's almost shy. I mean, he's such a polite guy. He's almost shy. It's almost hard to get words out of him. Brian Ortega, and see, the timeline is so important here. It's so important to then understand the consequence that this fight against Diego Lopez has. Let me back you up to California. Young man from Spain. Good boxer. Used to be a wrestler named Mr. Water Bottle, Mr. Hand Sanitizer, goes out and he's gonna do the job. He's gonna get beat up by the best fighter in the world, Alex Volkanovski. And Mr. Hand Sanitizer, boom, puts him down, grabs a world championship, extends his undefeated record. Now he's like 15 or 16-0. What are you gonna do with him? On one hand, you're going to go grab Volkanovski, and you're going to allow him to have a rematch. He was the champion, ranked number one. Return the same favor that he just did to you. But 1 week later, you have a main event between Ortega and Rodriguez. So, unspokenly, it looked as though that was going to be a number one contenders match. Like, the calendar just matched up too well for it not to be. Ortega goes out and he handles his business, which was a great fight. Like, getting over on Rodriguez is so difficult to do. Ortega beats him and does not call out Ilya Topuria. And he not only didn't call him out, he got asked by the media, why didn't you call him out? Like, to get the title shot, all you had to do, and the media was right. Like, just because of the way things lined up, And Volk wanted two things. Volk wanted an immediate rematch and a break. So it was going to be very easy. Even like the politics of it, it was going to be very easy to slide the winner of Ortega versus Rodriguez in while Volk's taking his break. All right, great. And the media even said to him, why didn't you call him out? Like, all you had to do for this fight to be made was say to Poirier's name. And it goes back to what I was telling you a moment ago, that Ortega doesn't play that. He's nice, and he's polite, and he's almost shy. And he's a very traditionalist, like Nate Diaz. You don't think of Nate like that, do you? You think of Nate as a brawler from Stockton. That's not who he is in his heart. Nate is a true martial artist. Like, he believes in honor and respect, and there is a code. And he will follow that code as he believes it to be, but so will Ortega. This is why he's so misunderstood. He's so incredibly misunderstood. So, all the while, Ilia Topuria doesn't have an opponent. Now, it looks as though it's going to be Max, and we're talking like it's going to be Max, and I'll go ahead and agree with you that it's going to be Max, but he still doesn't have that opponent. And that all got thrown out of whack because Ortega didn't say his name, but he didn't say his name because it had nothing to do with Topuria. Ortega didn't call out Topuria because Ortega thought he would be disrespecting Rodriguez. And he had a past with Rodriguez, and this was a rematch with Rodriguez. And he didn't want to just glance past it and push him to the side. Because that is not within the martial artist code that he adheres to. Very honorable. It's very respectable once you understand it. So what in the hell is he going to do? What's he going to do? I call his manager, talking to Tiki. And Tiki's like, man, I got full focus on this guy. All of my focus is on Ortega's fight. And then he informs me that it's at 155 pounds. Now, when I tell you that he's going to take on Diego Lopez, a lot of you hardcore fans know exactly what time it is. You go, wow, that is going to be a knockdown, drag him out. You can almost forget about the grappling. And in many ways, I would agree with you. But that's you hardcore fans. Some of you go, who the hell is Lopez? And therein lies the consequence right there. When you are a hardcore's lover, when you have a base, not you, it doesn't work if you have nothing. You have to have a base. But Lopez does, because he turns in excitement after excitement. He turns in win after win. This is a huge step up in name recognition. On the other side of the coin, he's taking on a featherweight. Right? It's one of these things. And the bounce that he could get, there's not really a way to stop that ball. You could just move him up. You could to the rankings committee. You could wait, see the landscape, see who calls him out, see if he calls somebody out. You could, but you could send him all the way to Islam with this win. You could, particularly on how he gets it. I'm not predicting that for you. I'm sharing the point that that's the level of consequence that this is going to have. And now you have Ortega at a new weight class. They asked him why. And he said, and see, you don't usually get fighters, particularly successful fighters like him, to understand and be aware. Ortega said, there's not a path to a championship for me at 45. The path to the championship for me is at lightweight. I had to move up. And again, that speaks to the honor of the code of the true martial artist, which is what he is, that is largely misunderstood. And this has come out of nowhere. Is it the most sought after fight? I mean, what would you guys say? International Fight Weekend, June 29th. What's the fight you most want to see? And a lot of you, Errol Hawani calls it the people's main event. A lot of you are saying Ortega and Lopez, and I don't disagree. I'm just going to add to that the honor that both of these guys are showing by taking this on short notice. And I'm going to remind you, the consequence here is potentially massive to the winner. Any athlete who competes at the highest level will tell you the importance of having a great team. Even in individual sports like boxing, wrestling, MMA, there is always a team of coaches and training partner who helped you get to the top. Think about Simone. Think about Serene. Think about Tiger. Think about Mike Tyson, Mayweather. They all have a coach. And the same thing goes with business. You need a solid team of trusted and knowledgeable people to help you advance if you're in the e-commerce business. Let Shopify be that teammate that helps you level up. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chale, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/chale, like the famous gangster, to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/chale. Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, and how does my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss like the majority of the male population does, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that actually work, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized, chewable oral spray and serum treatment options so you can find what works best for you. Reaching out for help in this area can feel a bit embarrassing, but Hims has made this process so dignified and simple. All you have to do is answer a few questions online and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. No in-person visits to the doctor or pharmacy are needed. The whole process is 100% online. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get that confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/chale. That's Hims. HIMS.com/chale, like the famous gangster. For your personalized hair loss treatment options, HIMS.com/chale. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So John Jones had a bunch of easy fights. They were world title fights and they were number one guys, but they were easy. There were guys that didn't belong. There was guys like Sonnen. There was guys like Belfort. There was guys like Reyes. There was guys like Alves. Thiago Santos, rather. And John was losing minutes. And in some of those fights, he was even losing rounds. And it was very clear that it wasn't the same guy that you'd seen that set records and became the youngest champion ever at 23 years old. And John just listened to it. He just took it. He still had the belt. He still had the ranking. He still had the main event spot. He still had the name John Jones. And he just took it. Pow, pow. People saying, oh, you lost this one, or this judge had it against you, or this guy stopped your takedown. John just took it. And finally, John responded, and he wasn't pissed off. John get hot fast. He wasn't pissed off. I remember this. This was years ago. This was before John took the 3-year break to go to heavyweight, and that was a year ago. And John said, you know, I know you think it's easy. I know it looks easy. I know you think to defend this belt 6 times against people like Sonnen and Belfort, Santos, Reyes. I know you think that that is easy. 5-round contest, losing rounds, having to come back in the 5th while out partying anytime that you wanted to. I know you think it's easy, but if it is, you go do it. You go do it. If I'm the guy that's scared to fight Francis, if I'm the guy, put a contract in front of both of us and let's just see which one of us signs it. This is John. This is John talking years ago. He's very calm. He was very measured. Said, hey, if I'm scared to fight Pavlich, would you mind asking Dana that question? Because I've already agreed to fight Pavlich. If Stipe doesn't show up, Pavlich is the backup. I've already agreed to him. Even though everyone wants to say that I didn't and that I won't. Now you have the talk of Aspinall. And you have the top of Stipe. But when you look at what happened to Sergey Pavlich over the weekend, it does begin, right? If you're fair, if you're not fair and objective, I got nothing for you here. You just keep listening to my voice or move on to something else. But if you are fair and objective, then you admit that when Sergey was the young, stoic-looking, 29-1, 6 first-round knockout in a row, Russian, headed to Madison Square Garden, you admit that in November of the previous year, you thought he would stop John. And you admit that you posted that somewhere or you mentioned that to a friend or a coworker. And now, and it's not as though Pavlich is bad. Pavlich is excellent. Pavlich is not fighting poorly. It's a very difficult division. It's the whole sport, which was largely John's point. That whether you want to say the Belforts and the Sonnen and the Santos and the Reyes, if you want to say those weren't the premier, then you go do it. Or show me somebody else that can do it. You think defending and staying on top and being the one that everyone watches, everyone know about the spinning elbow. They know about the teeth. They know about the leg kick. They didn't know about it, but they do now because they've been watching me. Everyone knows I can still go out there and I can still beat you all. You go do it. And I remember when John said, I remember sitting back going, God damn it. That's hard to argue against. And here we are years later. A different division champion. The biggest fight that he's had in 4 years is against Islam Makhachev for the preference of the rankings committee, which comes out every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Islam Makhachev has fought back and stood up to John Jones more than any heavyweight walking the planet. Let that sink in. And meanwhile, you're 29-1, 6 first-round knockout, stoic, blonde-headed Russian is on a 2-fight skid. And it sure does make you rethink about what John said. Like, in all fairness, and I don't want any of this to sound against Pavlich. Boy, I hope those aren't my words. I would not kick a guy when he's down. But I do share for you. When the narrative was going around our community on how Sergey's going to beat him, how Sergey's going to be one, how John Jones is going to fight Stipe and he's going to get out of the way, it was never about Tom Aspinall. It wasn't even about Stipe, who he was signed with. It was 100% about Pavlich. That's the truth. And you're part of that. But you couldn't tell me if Sergey Pavlich, you couldn't tell me right now if he's orthodox or southpaw. He fought 2 days ago and you watched it. You're not positive. You wouldn't bet your house on it. You couldn't tell me of those 6 first round knockouts, if he did it with his right hand or his left hand. If it was a TKO from the ground or if he knocked him out with a head kick. You might wager a little bit thinking, but you don't really know, do you? But do you see the difference? You know John Jones is going to push you in the fence and he's going to spin and elbow you. You know he's going to come out and he's going to kick you in the oblique. You know he doesn't shoot a double. He shoots a single and switches to a double. Like, you know everything he's going to do. You don't know that about Pavlich. You don't know that about the opponent. Advantage opponent. Element of surprise. And they still can't get what he's got, which is the world championship. And they still can't get the fight for the world championship. And they still can't defend it. And they still can't go undefeated for all of those years. It's one of those spots. Like, to end the debate on GOAT would seemingly be impossible. That's why the dick that coined it in the first place did it, to create controversy. We don't have a ranking system, just so you understand. We don't have a ranking system so we can figure out who can fight who. That's pretend. We have a ranking system because when people judge people, you're guaranteed that it will not be fair. There is nothing more unfair than people judging people. Go to rodeo, go watch gymnastics sometimes, go watch diving, anything where people are being judged by other people. I tell you that, he's still number one. And there is actually a way to end that debate. There is. John Jones is the youngest champion ever. If he can bookend that, he's got a lot of years left, right? Thanks to Randy Couture, but the years go by pretty fast. Just if, it's an if. If he can bookend it, you now don't have the discussion. You right now do. And maybe that's because you're a hater of John, or maybe that's because you're a supporter of St. Pierre. But if he bookend it, you got a big problem. It's much like I would argue that with Alex Pereira. If he found a way to get himself a heavyweight belt, it wouldn't even matter if it's an interim. If he became the first three-time champion, we wouldn't have the discussion of GOAT. It would be that person. And I'll admit, I was with you. I thought Sergey was next. I thought he was too big, too young, too powerful. I thought the fights against Reyes and Santos were closer than they should have been. I agree. But I don't think that as strongly as I think that John's side is correct, which if it's easy, you go do it. And nobody else has. And when you watch Sergey go down, it's not a commentary on Sergey. It's not even a commentary on Volkov. It's a commentary on just how good is John Jones. Conor McGregor is not to be critiqued. He's just not. He is to be studied and then he is to be copied. There is a path where you could credit certain individuals for beginning to forge a path or showing a blueprint. But there is nobody that has done what he has done. It's as simple as that. Every fighter, all 756 of the interchangeable mediocrities not named Adesanya or Sean have one commodity. Their only commodity that you can monetize is the performance. I mean, it's all bells and whistles, right? And, I mean, you have guys that don't even speak the language. You have guys that aren't even trying. You have guys that do not care that they cannot communicate. And guess what? They're stars. Like, there's another way to do this. And I'm pointing it out to you so that you understand, when you stand back and you're looking at Conor, it's important that you do understand you're watching the master at work. But that doesn't mean, right? It doesn't mean he doesn't get it wrong. Like in a reverse scenario, even a broken clock is right twice a day. So this would be the reverse. But what's he doing right now? What is he doing? He's claiming, and I don't know how else to say it. It's not true, but I really don't want to go down that route. And like, I even had this guy DM me and go, how can you say that? And he like heard something on the Joe Rogan program or something like this. And so then he was scolding me in a DM on Twitter. Like, I didn't know what time it was. It's like, no. When I tell you guys things, what I say and what I don't say, I am 100% correct at all times. And then, to operate and appear as a company man, I will present it to you as though I'm attempting to entertain you in front of being factually correct. That's an act. That is me performing. I am factually correct 100% of the time. So I don't know what to do here. Like, he did not pull out of this fight because of the toe, but that's the story we're going with. So let me just carry on. Let me just carry on. Is he right to do that? Right? You have a guy who has a commodity, a monetizable commodity, aside from the performance. And he's going with the toe. Okay. So, shows up at Bellator. And he gets in the ring. He's with Dan Hardy. He cuts a promo. And frankly, those two are great together. Like, if there was some way to get a Dan Hardy, Conor McGregor, if those guys would just, like, go sit in the back for an hour or so, oh, my God, I would just love it. Hardy has this way, right? If you guys are Dan Hardy fans, you'll know it. But he has a way of communicating. So does Conor. It was just great. It was just this wonderful piece of TV. Picture's worth a thousand words. I'm staring at Conor, right? He's wearing a Versace tank top. I don't think Versace made a tank top any more than Louis Vuitton ever made a sweatsuit. Like, I don't think. Damn, he looked cool in it. Like, he was ripped up in it. And he had this hat on. It was like this black with this yellow. He looked fire. And we've seen pictures of him. I watched a movie with him where it was a bloated Conor McGregor. It looked like a guy that had a leg injury who wasn't able to get in the gym and who had retained water weight. And that's what it looked like. That's not who Dan Hardy interviewed. Dan Hardy's in this guy's chiseled. And I'm going, wait a minute, see, these two stories don't go together. Like the real reason the fight with Chandler is not happening, like, but it's not completely in line with the physiology of Conor McGregor that stood in a tank top. Like, that's not a lot of clothes, right? I get a good look at a guy's body like that. I could work at the circus. Have you guys ever seen that where you pass by, like, the state fair, and this guy will tell you your weight within 3 pounds, up or down, and he'll pay you if he's wrong? I could be that guy. If you guys ever meet me, ask me, go, hey, Chip, by the way, what do you think I weigh? I'll nail it within 3 pounds. Like, every Saturday since I was 8.5 years old, I was in a room filled with boys headed to a scale, and I could look around and know exactly who was in my bracket. And so could everybody else. It's kind of like a skill that you have as a wrestler. And I only share that with you because this was not the bloated 185-pound Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor had been telling Chandler from day one, I'm fighting you at 185. Like, just didn't want to lose the weight, gotten so big in his time off, and didn't want to focus on the weight. That, you know how, like, every joke, but there's some truth to it. Like, when your buddy puts you down, but then he, like, laughs like he's your buddy, but he really just told you something, right? There was a truth when Conor McGregor was saying he wanted it at 185. If they would have spotted him 185, he'd have done it at 185. He just didn't want to get that weight off. But I'm looking at the guy in there with Hardy, and I know the real reason that the fight got canceled. I know we have a discolored toe, and we're going with this. Like, that. Just let me just play along. Okay, but is he right? That's my question. Is he right to take the toe angle? And the toe angle becomes true, right? It becomes true as soon as it exists. My pinky is just fine, for example. But if I was to miss recording today, and then tomorrow I tell you, yeah, I missed you. God damn, look at my pinky. Oh, man, I was in pain. Look at that pinky. It would have nothing to do with why I missed, but you'd be stuck with it. Like, there'd be no way around it. And the pinky toe of Conor McGregor was fascinating to me. It was fascinating that he would put that out. Like, this is a legit tough guy. This is a dude that did not mind having little experience and taking on Dustin Poirier. This is a dude that did not mind cutting down to 145 pounds and challenging Jose Aldo for all of 13 seconds. Like, this is a very legitimate tough guy who the last time we saw him got starched, has a leg snapped in half. It's as bad of an injury as I've ever seen. Now, in fairness, I've seen it three times. I saw Weidman's, I saw Anderson's, and I saw Connor's. But it's the same injury. Like, the one wasn't worse than the other. It's a literal statement. I tell you, it's as bad of an injury as I've ever seen. And he calls Joe Rogan over to sit down so he can finish his interview, because that's the job he promised that he would do. That is a legit tough guy. So, if he wants to pull off a fight because of a discolored toe, like, I'm not going to come and question his toughness. But I'm only going to pretend and play along so far. And of the people that know why this fight isn't happening, we're all playing along. My good friend Ariel, we're playing along. But it was a little bit of a surprise. There's a magazine when I was growing up. Now you got dot-coms, right? The magazine business is dumb. But there's a magazine when I was growing up. And it was called Pro Wrestling Illustrated. And it would cover all of the circuits. It would cover New Japan. It would cover NWA, AWA, and of course, Vince's product, then known as the WWF. And when you'd be covering a wrestler, but he had nothing you could speak of, right? It was a tremendous joke within the industry that when you were bragging up a guy that had no accomplishments, you would talk about his incredible tendon strength. Nobody has the foggiest idea what tendon strength means. That was the brilliance within the writing. And it was as much as the kayfabe and the storyline and the potatoes and the workers and the jobbers. It was much of the vernacular as anything else. When a guy had this incredible, like, look out for this guy. He's taking on Kurt Angle. He's got the Olympic champion, but don't underestimate him. He's got incredible tendon strength. Like, that's funny to a brilliant level, and people would gobble it right up, and they would never even question it. So when the reason you're pulling out for you intrinsically is just you don't want it known, but it's to the point that you turn to a discovered pinky toe, and you have proof. You supply proof. You supply a photograph of a discolored pinky toe, which may or may not be broken. And it may or may not be yours. You don't include your face. It's just a picture of a toe. Okay, but are you right to do that? So part of Connor's interview, this is a very common piece of psychology, by the way. I have a friend that's a DA in New York. And they'll catch all the time. They will catch a guy on a home invasion. Did a burglary. They'll have him on camera. They'll go down to the Hawk shop where he's Hunter Biden dropping off the laptop. They'll have it on video. They'll have his fingerprints on all of it. They'll bring it in. They'll sit him down. And they will get a full confession. You guys want to hear something disgusting? Many times when people will do a home invasion, they will go to the bathroom in the person's house. I'm sorry. That's gross. They will go to the bathroom right on the floor. It's like a sign of dominance. Like an am. Like I owned you. I came in. I took your stuff and I left. My friend who's the DA told me, they will have guys absolute focus. They'll have video. There's no way to not have finger, but they'll have an absolute confession to stealing, to breaking in, to taking your VCR and your TV. In his 25 years in the business, he's never got anyone to admit to the bathroom part. Never. Not one time. I took the VCR. I broke in. I was on meth. I went to the Hawk shop. I sold it and the TV for $50. I did not do that. 25 years of denial of that. And I tell you that story because you could relate in some way, as much as that's an extreme example, in some way, somewhere in your life, there's been something that happened that wasn't a big deal, that no one would have cared about, but you did not want it known for whatever reason. It was against your code. It was against who you pretended to be. There was some reason that you would have taken a higher penalty but not copped to that. So we're in this situation with Connor, and we're all going to play along. We've all agreed, all right, it's a toe. But it comes back to the tendon strength. Like, you can never prove a rib. A rib is a great one. You can never, you're not even going to prove COVID-19. You've got HIPAA and other laws. You do not owe anybody an explanation. So if you're going to choose to go with one, do you go with the pinky toe? And it's just a question, but let's go back to the interview that he conducted with Dan Hardy where he said we deserve to be at our best. We fought injured many times. We fought injured in our last fight. We are going to be at 100%. We are going to give the fans. And then whatever comes after that, oh my goodness, it makes me uncomfortable. But this is the master talking. This is the master saying the things that the minions say. Did he make a mistake? That's all I'm asking. Now, I can live with the pinky toe. I can live with the pinky toe because of my friend in New York that's a DA 25 years, and the guy will say he took the VCR and he didn't do the, like, okay. But, I mean, one thing that sold about Conor McGregor was the same thing that sold with Stone Cold Steve Austin. He wasn't a good guy and he wasn't a bad guy. He stood on an island alone. He will fight the good guys and he will fight the bad guys. Everyone else, the good guys would only fight the bad guys, and the bad guys would only fight the good guys. He's by himself. No friends, no nothing. Bring it on. Me against the world. And now all of a sudden it's we. Now all of a sudden you got a frog in your pocket. And you're looking around and going, okay, hey, when you're saying we, by the way, you understand there's nobody here with you. Like, when this ends, your career ends. Your career will die. The we you speak about continues on. It is the number one reason if you ever hear a fighter come out and speak poorly about Dana White, the psychology behind that, when that fighter's career comes to an end, Dana White's career goes on. That, from a psychological standpoint, is the resentment. Just so you understand. And the master, Conor McGregor, for the first time ever, all of a sudden, is talking about we. Now, that's okay. It's an interview. It's Bellator. It's with Dan Hardy. It's impromptu. He's got the first, he's doing other things. It's okay. I'm being very critical of it. But you have to be critical. He's the best. He is the best on a mic that we've had, and he never gets it wrong. And is it a mistake to proclaim ahead of time that you are 100%, that you have dotted every I, you have crossed every T, this is the 100% best version of myself? I mean, to prove that point, I will not even go on with so much as a pinky toe out of place. I will be perfect. Is that the situation you want to be in? Or does that create a courage? See, most guys don't have that. Most guys will have a built-in excuse. They just will. Like, they'll go to a club 3 weeks before a fight, get sauced up, and put a video out so that everybody saw them at the club so that if things didn't go well, they could just defer back to, well, you know, I didn't take it very serious. As a matter of fact, you even saw I was at the club. This next time, I won't go to the club. And that in and of itself is enough to flip the script. Like, most guys would do that. But now you have a guy who's the master, who is proclaiming, everything will be just perfect. In a literal sense, all the way down to my pinky toe. Now, I can't call a guy out like that when that's the same guy who sat busted in half with a medical team telling him, come on, wrap the show. We need you. We got to go. And he said, no, I'm going to finish the show. I'm going to go down with the ship. I can't question a guy like that. But those two stories don't blend. And if you want to admit that you took the TV and you took the VCR and you went down to the Hawkshire, if you want to admit that, but to protect this other thing, are you making a mistake? Is it a mistake? And what does happen next time? I mean, the ultimate display of power, one of the ultimate battles that you would have seen, and it didn't happen. And I give credit to Conor McGregor for not forcing this, but he could have. And I don't think he would have liked the result, but I'm not positive of that. The ultimate display of power would have been to carry on with it and not fight Michael Chandler. And I don't know how those heads would have been. I don't know. You got the biggest draw in the history of the business against the boss who said you're fighting. I'm just sharing for you, like, that did not go down. And the fight that I wanted, the ultimate fight that I wanted, was McGregor versus USADA. I wanted that so bad. I wanted so bad. And I thought Conor would have had him. By the way, I agree with Conor's interpretation of that bylaw, but it never got tested. And I'm telling you that because it's very hard to understand the psychology of people that live a different life than you do. It's very hard. I'll give you a great example. What does a rich man want? What does a rich man want? If the guy's a billionaire, he's got everything he wants. What does he want? Is he now no longer like you? He doesn't want the nice clothes? He don't want to drive the nice car? Like, what is the difference? Well, there is an answer, and I'll share it with you. The billionaire still wants to buy things. He just wants to buy things that money can't. Fine example. If you ever do a business deal with a very rich guy, you will never get it in writing. Never. This many times. I got one that lives 15 miles behind me. His name's Phil Knight. He owns a small company called Nike. He's very well known for this. He will do a deal with you, and he will never write it down. Lorenzo Fertitta, Dana White. Fine examples that you would know. You will get a deal, but you won't get it in writing. And the psychology behind that is the rich, but he's now buying something that money can't. When the deal comes through and you're sitting there worried, is he going to honor and pony up? He absolutely will, and he'll do it on time. And now he has just bought something that money can't. He has just bought trust, integrity, respect. It's a very simple thing, but it's psychology. Conor McGregor is not fighting because he likes to punch people. He's not fighting for the money. He's not getting a rush out of it. And he's not getting a necessity out of it. But he does have an opportunity in front of the world to display the one thing that he has fainted all along. The only thing Conor McGregor ever sold, and when I use that term sold, the one thing that he advertised that he didn't have, the confidence was real. The skill was real. The speed was real. That left hand was real. All of it was real. His loyalty to his team and pride in his country was all real. The only thing that he ever fainted that he never had was power. And it's the one thing that he wants. I don't begrudge him for that. I'm a power-hungry person myself. I fully understand it. But the one way, it's not a title shot. Not to come back and walk right in against Leon. The biggest move he could do to display that power, and I'm not positive he'd like it how this is going to go. I'm not guaranteeing you that this is a hand that he's going to win. But the biggest display of power would be to come back and fight and not do it against Chandler. And I don't suppose for you that's the direction that we're going, but I will point it out. And ever getting rebooked or ever getting back onto a train that once would finish, hobbled with a medical team 12 feet away, but refusing to go because your job was not done, and then not making a walk for a reason that in your own mind was so shameful, you would replace it with a discolored pinky toe that may or may not have been yours and may or may not have been broken. It's an interesting thing. And I'll leave you with one final thought. One thing that infuriated me as a fan of college wrestling is I would go to a dual meet and there'd be one match. It's called the money match. It's the one match that you drove there for. It's the one match you wanted to see. It's the one match that you and your friends, when you agreed to meet there, that's the match you wanted to see, and it wouldn't happen. One of the guys didn't get on the scale. One of the guys wasn't feeling good. It happens all the time. And I didn't have a problem with it. Like, I've been in the sport long enough. I've seen people bitch out every Saturday. My problem is when the dude that bitched out would then show up to the match. Like, if you don't feel good or you got the sniffles or you're being home in bed, you don't make it to the arena. You don't sit with the team. You're not in the lineup. If you are, pull the straps up and go out there. What's the difference? Honest to God, there might be one. You might have an answer. I don't know, and I'm not pretending. I could not imagine. If I was sitting right here, I could not. What is the difference to me being here? To wrestling, what is the difference? Like, what could possibly be going on? You name it. I don't say tuberculosis. Like, I wouldn't care what your answer was. If I can be here, why can't I be here? And their guys would do it, and they'd show their face, and I could never understand it. I don't know anything about a pinky toe. I don't know anything about feeling good. I fought a man 1 week ago. I didn't even consider feeling good. I didn't even think about feeling good. That would be silly. How would I feel good? How can I possibly go into practice every day and then feel... How? How? Answer it. You ever jammed your finger? Do you know what you do? You tape it to the other finger. And I'm not questioning the toughness of this man. I'm not questioning it. I believe in it. But the truth will set you free. I don't understand the reasoning of going down a path of a discolored pinky toe, of going down a path of I will not do this until we feel great, till we can deliver for the fans, till we can put on our best. Why? Why would you possibly think they want you at your best? Why would you think that? They just want to see you. Just go in there. At any weight class. You made up this weight class. It's not even the weight class that you're at. That's how much we don't care. It could be 3 rounds, it could be 5. We don't care. You guys figure that in the back. You get paid $100,000 or $100 million. Like we do not care at all. Just get in there. Just get in there. Don't stay here. Get in here. That's all we want. And the best and the us and the we, that's bullshit. All right, everybody, that's it for the episode. Thank you for listening. And I want to give a shout out to Dawn, who left me a review on Apple Podcasts, which reads, "I love the breakdown of the Anderson fight. You never lost a round, ever." That is true. Not by any rational standard, Don. That is very true. Thank you for speaking the truth. I hope that you will join me on my next episode, which is going to be Friday, from Vegas. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.